This is Bill McClure for the Triangle Radio Reading Service, and welcome to another edition of Take My Arm.
This is Richard Dunnigan, and this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience and is designed with the assistance of print and visually impaired volunteers.
And this is Bob Martin, and boy, did I have a terrible time last night.
What happened to you last night?
Well, my wife and I had just gotten home from shopping, and we were about to start dinner, and guess what happened?
I couldn't possibly guess what might happen to you, Bob.
See? That's what having the electricity go out will do to you.
I know the feeling.
I sure hope so, Bill. Anyway, I had just walked into the house. My arms were full of groceries. I'm halfway across the kitchen, and poof! The power goes off. There I am, standing in the dark, don't know where to put the groceries, and I drop my car keys.
You're right, Bob. I've never had that happen to me.
Is that it?
No, that's just the start. We get the groceries out of the way, but we're still hungry, and have to try to fix something to eat.
So?
In the dark?
Bob, it's not impossible to do that.
Well, that's easy for you to say. You've had experience.
And so have a lot of other people.
Yeah, but listen to what happened next. I asked my wife where the measuring cups were. And you know what she said to me?
I guess she told you where they were.
No, she said, they're right over there. Can you imagine that? Right over there. Do people say that sort of thing to you?
As a matter of fact, yes.
They even say it to me, Bob.
What do you do then?
I go ahead and fix dinner. Blind people don't stop eating just because they can't see.
Oh, I know that. I just thought they must have somebody else to do the cooking for them.
Well, Bill and I have a couple of stories for you to disprove that.
Right. How about the case of Laura Martinez in Chicago?
As an infant, Laura had eye cancer and soon lost one eye and all ability to see. But her mother refused to treat her any differently from her three brothers and two sisters. She has no memory of ever being able to see. When she was still too young to realize she was blind, she dreamed of being a surgeon. When that became an impossibility, she studied briefly to become a psychologist.
But she also had always been intrigued by the kitchen. As a youngster, she used to take knives from the kitchen and go out in the backyard with her brothers and carefully dissect leaves. From that came the idea of being a surgeon. In the kitchen, she could still use her knives.
She had cooked for years in her home in Moline, Illinois, making traditional Mexican dishes, and she loved the experience. Finally, she left and entered the Cordon Bleu Institute in Chicago, where she learned making their famous sauces and how to make things from scratch. Though the school had not dealt with a blind student before, they soon learned that she could do better than many of the other sighted students.
Laura said that she had to learn to feel the food and to notice the different sounds that the food made in a frying pan. She sees the meat with her hands and can easily move strips of meat around, laying them in the correct positions to be cubed. She says that she concentrates and can imagine the flavor and the smell and the textures of everything that she prepares.
To complete her training at the Institute, she works daily in the cafeteria at the Lighthouse for the Blind and is looking forward to graduating in a few months. After graduation, she knows it will be a challenge to secure a chef's position, but she's had to start small and work up before.
And she's already formulating the menu for the restaurant that she plans to open someday in Miami.
And she doesn't wait for somebody else to do the cooking for her.
And while Laura Martinez may be looking forward to moving to Miami, something else is happening in Miami already. There is a program called Cooking Without Looking, which combines a trip to the zoo with cooking. Children like groups from the Miami Lighthouse for the Blind make a trip to the zoo. They experience the animals. They feel the tongue of a giraffe as it eats from your hand. They touch the strange skin of a rhinoceros. They sit on top of a camel. Not just the sights, but the sounds and touch of the animal's world.
Then after they wash up, they head to the kitchen for a whole new experience, learning to cook without being able to see. Children who are blind learning how to work in a kitchen from chefs who are blind.
What they learn is how to perform an ordinary process, like cooking, in an extraordinary way.
And that really is all that sight-impaired people are doing. The same thing that all other people are doing, but in a different way.
and doing it far better than might be expected.
That's Cooking Without Looking on the Internet.
And don't forget one of our own TRRS volunteers, Alan Radford. Although Alan is blind, he not only does all the cooking for himself and his wife, who is also blind, he used to do a cooking show as one of the TRRS broadcasts.
Wow! I'd sure like to meet him.
Well, you're in luck. Alan is going to be joining us in just a minute.
I sure am lucky. I have a question to ask him.
And what is that?
Well, last night we managed to put something together in the dark, except we had one problem that I couldn't figure out.
Which was?
How do you turn on your electric stove if the power goes out?
Do you have a Braille keypad for it?
Oh, I didn't think of that. But even still, my wife said maybe I had to turn it over and shake it. Turn it over and shake it. Bill, can you imagine saying something like that? It's right over there.
Our guest today is Alan Radford. Alan was a co-host of Adventures in the Kitchen, which used to be a part of our independent living program. Alan, tell us a little about yourself.
I was actually born here in Raleigh. I am a native living in Raleigh, but I was born at Old Rex some years ago. Grew up in Johnston County on a tobacco farm. I went to the Governor Moorhead School. Eventually got a degree in psychology from, at that time, Atlantic Christian, but now it's Barton College. Well, my mother's always been a good cook, and I sort of learned that I could cook by following directions in a cookbook more out of necessity than anything else, because sandwiches and a can of soup got kind of old. So I started learning how to do some things and learned I could do it very well and just snowballed from there, so to speak.
Alan, can you give us some idea about the progression of your blindness?
I was born legally blind. My optic nerve didn't fully develop. Later in, well, up into adulthood, it was discovered that I had a partially detached retina. The ophthalmologist that I use is a retina specialist, not knowing how long it had been detached. At surgery, there's always the risk of hemorrhaging or infection. He said it could come all the way off and would be in a fix. So he suggested no surgery whatsoever. And similar to sand in the hourglass, it just sort of finally ran out. I guess like most people who have sight and then don't, I was angry, I was mad, I was frustrated. And one day I stopped and I talked to myself. I just made sure nobody was around that could hear me. I told myself I could still do the same things I could before, with the exception of color. It all felt the same to me, although I have the concept of color, but I no longer can see.
Did you go to the Governor Moorhead School your entire academic career?
At that time, in the very early 60s, Johnston County, rural county school system, they were not really capable or prepared or even knowledgeable on how to educate a visually impaired student. So eventually I did go to the Governor Moorhead School and graduated.
Now, when you were in, well, in both places, did you function naturally? You tried to function in the public schools as a print student.
When I first went to Governor Moorhead, the school I thought was, regardless of what vision someone has, everybody learns Braille, no matter what. And as the years went on, it sort of, well, if you have some vision and you want to try one class in large print, okay. And then several years later, it changed to where, well, if you're doing okay with that one subject and you want to try more, you can, if you can mix it, if you want to, whatever you want. So that's what I did.
Naturally, I would think that would have affected your Braille reading.
Yes, but, gosh, I don't know if it was 89, 90. I relearned Braille. I don't read as well as someone such as Sheila, who's totally blind from birth, but, you know, I do okay.
It seems like Braille is being taught less and less today because of emerging technology. What do you think of Braille in our present situation?
No batteries, no electrical cords, no lights. Braille can be read riding in a car, on a bus, on a plane, in bed, if somebody so wanted, probably standing on their head. My daughter is totally blind. She was adopted from Russia just a little over 13 years ago, last week. And she is an exceptionally wonderful Braille reader. Technology is part of life, but I think Braille does have a place and a purpose.
How differently would your life be if you couldn't read Braille, especially as it relates to your cooking?
It would be kind of tough because recipe on cassette, you have to play it forward, then you have to rewind it, then you have to play it forward, rewind it. You wear out the tape before you even get through a few recipes. And, you know, selecting a recipe, you've got to listen to the whole cassette to get to the recipe you're actually looking for. With Braille, you just flip to that page.
What about independence? Do you think that reading Braille added to your independence?
Oh, yes. I mean, I can play Uno. I can play Crazy Eights, Blackjack, Rook, any number of card games with Braille cards.
What types of work experiences have you had?
Well, I have worked with Services for the Blind as an independent living counselor. I have worked as a receptionist for a psychosocial therapist. I've never really worked in food service as such. I volunteer with the Red Cross. May will make my 23rd year. I volunteer with TRRS, as well as Leukemia and Lymphoma Society.
As a volunteer with these organizations, what type of services do you offer them?
Well, with the Red Cross, I taught first aid and CPR for 18 years. I teach disaster services classes. I do presentations on what you can do to prepare for a disaster, or just in general about the Red Cross and the various services that we provide. I put together packets for newly inducted members of the armed forces. It's for their families. Part of that includes a, say, 4x6 refrigerator magnet where they can put their name, their rank, or serial number, or whatever other information the family member might need if there's a sudden illness, a death, or even a birth. And they want to get in contact with the service person. They got it right there at their fingertips. I've done a variety of things with the Red Cross. I have answered the switchboard. I have done thank you calls to donors. I work in the blood center as a greeter. Hello, how are you? You need to read through this booklet. Sign your name here. Check it off here. I had the opportunity to do a variety of things through the years with the Red Cross.
Has your volunteer work become different for you since you have become totally blind?
In some aspects, yes, but in most ways, no. I have been with the Raleigh Triangle Area Chapter of the Red Cross for 22 years now, and majority of the people, the staff, as well as volunteers, know me. They know what I can do, what I'm capable of. I mean, I still run into a few people who are a little apprehensive about whatever it is I'm doing, but they watch me long enough to figure out I do know what I'm doing, and they go on.
Tell us a little of what it's like teaching CPR.
Okay, well, technically, it's hands-on. You have to open the airway by head tilt, chin lift. Place one hand on the forehead, couple of fingers under the chin, and you just tilt the head back to open the airway. You look, listen, and feel for breathing. You feel for a pulse. I've had people that were a little bit apprehensive, but once I got the class going, working the group, because you only have two eyes, and only 80% of your sensory input is through your eyes. I got two eyes on the side of my head, one on each side, that I use very well. I've got 10 eyes at the end of my wrist. So I have learned exactly, very quickly, proper hand positioning, how it should sound when done right, or when you give a breath and it sounds like a flat tire. You're not making a good seal around the victim's mouth with your mouth. I blow enough minds to where people realize he does know what he's talking about.
Alan has his wife, Sheila, with him today. We'd like to talk with her a little. Sheila, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I also was a student at the Governor Moorhead School. But unlike Alan, who went to public school for the first few years and Governor Moorhead School after, I did it kind of the other way around. I went Governor Moorhead until 10th grade, or through 10th grade, and then went to Currituck County High School for the last two, where I graduate. And I work for an insurance company in the area as a customer service rep. And I like to volunteer as well for the Red Cross sometimes when I can. What I want to do at some point is become an interpreter for Spanish-speaking people.
Tell me about your work with the insurance company.
I answer phones. I verify benefits. If a person has the federal employee program and they get another coverage, I send that over to another area to get that updated. I use JAWS and a Braille display. I use JAWS at home. I've been there for about 6 years now, almost.
Did you get that job through the Division of Services for the Blind, or how did that work?
Well, what happened is I was working at another job in Research Triangle, and they lost their contract. As a result of losing their contract, they had a job fair for us, and one of the companies was Blue Cross Blue Shield. So, yes, DSB helped me get that job, but I put my foot in the door myself.
Tell me, I'm also fascinated by the fact that you sort of reversed the process from an educational standpoint. You started at the Governor Moorhead School, and then you went to public school. How did you think you got along with that transition?
Governor Moorhead School had a program with Broughton High School, and I was denied entry into that program, and it had something that I wanted very, very badly, which was Spanish classes. Since I didn't get in, I talked to my parents, and I said, I want to go to public school. I want to take Spanish. And I did, and my grades were actually better at public school. Plus, I already knew some people at the school, so it wasn't like I was, you know, a stranger. I was in a way, but I had some acquaintances that I already knew. So that made it easier for me. Since I wasn't able to get any Braille books, my parents helped out a lot, and my teachers helped out a lot. They read stuff to me, you know, my homework assignments. My teachers put my tests on a tape.
With both you and your husband working in different locations, how do you handle transportation?
There is a service called T-Lynx that is a paratransit service. I get up at 4:45 in the morning, I'm ready to go by 5:45. If not, I miss my ride. And we get a monthly pass for $128 that gives me pretty much unlimited rides to and from.
With both of you being blind, how do you think that affects your relationship?
I think it's a good thing. We know that each of us require, you know, type of things like the systems, putting stuff back where we find it. I have no problem with it. We're coming from the same place, so to speak.
We understand where each other's coming from. I mean, like, when we say, oh, sign of person has been here again, we both laugh and go on, because we know people mean well, but sometimes they're more hindrance than help. We, you know, sort of similar but a little bit different backgrounds, but the fact that we're both blind is the thing that ties us together. Sheila is, you know, like in every couple, somebody's good at one thing and the others. I do the cooking and Sheila washes the dishes. Sheila is even happy with peanut butter and jelly sandwich. And some days I'm happy she likes that. But we work well together, communicate very well. And I think it's because we are both visually impaired and, you know what the other person needs.
Alan, how do you set up your kitchen so that you know where things are?
When I moved in my house, I had a lot of very helpful, well-meaning, sighted friends. And then once they left, I looked at all my drawers and all my cabinets, and I rearranged things to where I thought they should go, like my spices and herbs are near the stove. My measuring spoons, measuring cups, casserole dishes are relatively close to the stove. My cups and everyday glasses are right above the dishwasher. Refrigerator is sort of where things would fit, but I don't move things around. It's like a lot of things, where I found it, it's where it goes back. Recently, my mother came to visit. She was being well-meaning and helpful, except I called her that night after 9 o'clock. Mama, where did you put the stopper to the sink? If it had been a snake, we would both be dead. She set it on the middle divider between the two sinks. That's not where we keep it. And I'm so glad my mother's not hearing this, but we were not real happy with her.
How about spices and similarly shaped cans? How do you know what you're pulling out?
The way my cabinets are organized, or magnetic braille labels, or a rubber band and a 3x5 index card brailled out.
What's the most complicated thing you've ever cooked?
Italian cream cheesecake. It was very uncooperative.
With something as complicated as baking that needs to be checked to make sure it's done properly, how do you handle that?
I have a cake tester. It's a wire, 6-8 inches long. I stick it down in the middle of the cake, pull it out, pull it between my fingers if it's still wet. A couple more test sites if it's still wet. Stick it back in the oven because it's not done.
We'll leave Alan in the kitchen for now, and we want to thank Alan and Sheila for being with us today on Take My Arm.
It's time again for the TRRS Radio Theater on the Air with another episode of Blind Justice with Bill McClure, Richard Dunnigan, and Myra DeBruhl as Madame Julia, the cook that Bill has known since she was a child. The scene opens with Bill having rescued the Kansas City Opera Hall from disaster with the help of the Opera Hall manager and is now headed across the street for his appointment with an old friend who runs the cooking school.
That little sound sure makes it easy to get around town. Ah, this must be it.
Pardon, monsieur, I am Pauvre Richard, assistant to Madame Julia, mistress extraordinaire of the culinary arts. You must be Cookie. Madame is expecting you.
What a fancy welcome.
With Madame, perfection is expected.
Do you always talk like that?
No, but the boss likes it, and she says it's all about the atmosphere. But before we go upstairs, I heard talk that you used to be friends with Julia Child. Is that true?
Who, me? No. People get it all mixed up. What I've said is that I was friends with Miss Julia ever since she was a child. We met in cooking class when we were both students at the Governor Moorhead School in North Carolina. She was the queen of the skillet, and I was the knave of the frying pan. But together, we whipped up some pretty fine victuals.
I'm looking forward to the results. Here, take my arm and we'll go up the stairs. And here she is.
Julia?
Bill!
You sound good.
Thank you.
You're sure a sight for sore eyes.
How can you tell, you old goat?
Because you look the same as you did when we first met. Let's see, how many years ago was that?
That's enough. You don't give away a lady's age.
Is there a lady here? Ow! You hit me with... It felt like a walnut.
And you thought you were safe hiding behind Richard. Not for me, you're not.
Speaking of Richard, Do you mind if he leaves off the accent for a while?
I thought you'd like it.
Tell me, last time I saw you, you were working on a way to cook a 20-pound turkey in less than 3 hours. Did you ever succeed?
Sure did. All you have to do is cut it in 3 pieces. Cut the back section off and then split the breast up the middle. What do you have?
3 pieces, each weighing 7 pounds.
At 20 minutes a pound?
Under 3 hours.
And when it's all done, you just pin the pieces back together and put it on the table.
And nobody notices?
I didn't see any difference. Would you?
I didn't even notice when the dog snuck into class back at Moorhead and ate your biscuits. And you blamed me.
You left the door open. Anyway, I've got another great new tip for you. Corn on the cob without boiling away all the vitamins.
I drink the water.
Easier than that. Shuck the ears and then put them in a microwave. 1 minute, high heat, and rotate. When tender, serve.
What's a microwave? I have no idea what you're talking about.
Oh, I'm sorry. You won't have microwaves for a few years. You see, not only is everything up to date in Kansas City, but we're ahead of the times. When you're in a retirement home, your granddaughter will understand. Right now, it's just a dream.
Dream on. How about those new recipes we were going to share?
Class is in session. We have a special occasion where we compare gastronomics. At the opposing table, Mashur Kuki. I will begin and...
Poub Richard.
Will assist. My specialty.
Le piste de résistance.
The poulet extraordinary.
Le poulet extraordinaire.
Le couteau. Poor Richard the poulet.
Oui, le poulet.
Le couteau.
Le couteau.
Now I take the couteau and slice the poulet into the strips, and then Richard the mallet.
Oui, madame, le moulet.
Then I'll use the moulet to tenderize the poulet. And now, secret herbs and spices mixed together. Apply generously the glacier.
Le glacier.
Now onto the cooking sheet.
L'assiette de cuisine.
And cover with the fumel de Nepal.
La fumel de Nepal.
Into the oven.
La four.
40 minutes and voila.
There.
Now, Monsieur Cookie.
Got you covered. This is what I call my chicken surprise. Okay, Richard, a chicken.
One mighty fine Rhode Island red, plucked and cleaned.
Now, knife.
Your choice, sir, of the Ginsu Collection 2011.
Now, I slice the chicken up into big pieces. And to make sure it's very tender, Richard, a hammer.
Right on, Cookie, a hammer.
I pound it up right and tender. Now the secret herbs and spices mixed up with honey and slap it on.
Slap it on.
Find something clean to lay it on.
A halfway clean tray.
And cover it with cactus.
A prickly pear is good.
Out on the prairie, we lay some rocks over a good fire and put it on there. In here, I'll use the oven. 40 minutes should be good.
Bon. Okay, taste time. Pardon. Taste to me.
Delicious.
Mine too.
Let me try yours.
And I'll have a bite of yours.
Whoa.
Whoa is right.
This is the same.
We cooked up the same thing.
I brought this back from Paris.
I cooked this up on the prairie.
Bill, did you go through Scarborough?
Yep. And you?
I went to Paris.
I didn't.
I've got a cooking school to run.
I don't. So what do you think?
Don't ask.
Don't tell.
Anybody ask, just tell them it's a secret recipe.
Hey, works for me. I need a job. And around here, everyone around Mademoiselle Julia works on blind faith, which is just the thing for...
Blind justice.
You know, every time I hear someone talk about cooking, I get the strangest feeling.
Let me guess. You get hungry.
Oh, come on, Richard. I'm deeper than that. I think we need Dr. Bill's input for this.
Okay. It's time for Insights with Dr. Bill.
This is Dr. Bill. What's on your mind?
Dr. Bill, Bob says that whenever he hears someone talking about cooking, he gets the strangest feeling. What would you suppose it is?
I'd guess that he was hungry.
Oh, Dr. Bill, your insights are so amazing.
I just said that.
I know, Richard, but Bob needs all the support he can get. Bob, tell me what's on your mind.
Oh, Dr. Bill, it's so nice to hear your voice. Every time I hear someone talking about cooking, it's...
Go ahead.
Well, the truth is, I get hungry.
I said that.
Richard, not everyone has your abilities. You have to be supportive.
You're right. What can I do?
Well, we are here in Alan's kitchen, and what Alan has been talking about has obviously stirred a need in Bob.
So?
Ask Alan to prepare a dish.
Right here?
Can you think of a better place than in a kitchen?
Wow. Now I know why we sometimes call you Dr. Bill, Bill.
Psst, not in front of Bob.
Oh.
Go ahead.
Here we are in Alan's kitchen, and all of us have been stimulated by what Alan has had to say. And Alan has agreed to give us an example of his expertise.
I thought it may be a beefaroni casserole. Like a lot of southern cooks, I've learned how to do a lot of things by trial and error. My wife, Sheila, she cringes sometimes when I tell her how I cook. But with the beefaroni casserole, I put a coat in the bottom of a cast iron Dutch oven with a little oil, just enough to coat the bottom. Then I heat my pan up, I dice up an onion in it, saute that. And then I put in a pound of ground beef. Brown it, and I presume it's brown because I'm told every recipe I've ever seen says brown your beef. So I just take it for granted that it's brown. But one of my techniques, as I've told Sheila, I don't hold hands with it, but I feel of it after a while to see if it's still raw feeling or if it's starting to feel cooked. And she just cannot stand that. But like I say, I don't hold hands with it. And when I feel like it's brown, I've already put a little salt, a little pepper in it. I have cooked 8 ounces of whatever your favorite shaped pasta is. I drain it. I mix it in with the ground beef. I have grated up about 4 ounces of sharp cheddar. I sprinkle that over the macaroni hamburger mixture. Stir it around. I dump it in a 9x13 casserole dish. I mix together a can of tomato soup and a can of milk. Pour this over the top of it. Stick it in a preheated 350-degree oven for about 30 minutes. And like spaghetti and a few other things, it's really better the next day because the flavors have had a chance to blend and mingle.
Anything else, Bob?
Not while I'm eating my beefaroni casserole.
Thanks for telling me what's on your mind.
And so ends another episode of Insights with Dr. Bill.
Oh, isn't it amazing how Dr. Bill always knows what is needed? I'm sure glad we have him on our show.
Conversations. The voices of TRRS.
We welcome today Mary Jo Gellenbeck. Mary Jo, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you, Bob. Happy to be here.
And could we start out by just having you tell us a little about yourself?
Oh, sure. Happy to. So, again, my name is Mary Jo Gellenbeck, which I really like my name, Bob. And I'm a happy homemaker, a mother of twin boys, 11-year-olds named Henry and James, or James and Henry. We moved to Raleigh in 2004, so it's been 8 years now, and very excited that we did. We came down from New Jersey. My husband's work brought us into the area. Because I'm a happy homemaker, most of my working hours are early morning and in the afternoons, and I have a lot of time available in the middle of the day, and so I'm very excited to be one of the volunteers here at TRRS.
You mentioned that you came to the Raleigh area because of your husband's business. What kind of work is he in?
Yeah, he's an IT specialist. Works with Verizon Business. So Verizon Business headquarters down here in Raleigh, and they moved his entire department from New Jersey down here to Raleigh.
Can you tell us about your education?
Well, I'm a graduate from Villanova University. Graduated in 1985, the big year that the basketball team won the championship. Yeah, it was a big year. And I graduated with a major in communication arts. So it has been a very long dream of mine to be on the radio. So when I saw in the NNO an article talking about TRRS and its services, I got very excited with the opportunity to be able to be trained and become a reader on the airways. So you could say I'm checking off one of my items on my bucket list.
Do you have any hobbies?
Oh, yes, I do. One of them is playing tennis, Bob. I really love playing tennis, so I get out there at least 3 times a week. The other thing I really enjoy doing outside is working in my garden. I love taking my shoes off and walking across the grass and trimming and pruning all of the little small plants. One thing that I like to do inside is I love to read the newspaper. Do it every day with my husband. So when I saw TRRS and their services of reading over the airways, I thought, I can do that.
Now that you are a TRRS volunteer, what kind of programming are you responsible for?
Well, I do the live reading of the USA Today newspaper on Friday nights. We read the newspaper from cover to the back page, and it's a lot of fun just reading the stories from the nation.
You said we. Who's your partner?
Oh, yeah. I have two that I really enjoy working with. Wayne Wagner is one of them, and Doreen Yelton is the other.
You know, when you go through your training, you're told don't editorialize, but now you have a chance. You're on a very personal level with those people listening to you today. Is there something special you'd like to tell them?
TRRS is filled with wonderful people, Bob. I've really enjoyed meeting everyone who volunteers here, and together we put in thousands of hours collectively with fun and enjoyment, simply reading for the blind and visually impaired. So I'd like to just let everyone know, please turn on your listening ears, sit back, and enjoy while we do all the hard work.
I'd love to listen to you do your program some night, but my memory is bad. Could you tell me again what night you broadcast on?
Yeah, I'm happy to. It's Friday night, starting at 7 p.m. I read the USA Today newspaper live with Wayne Wagner or Doreen Yelton.
If someone wanted to call in and tell you what a good job you're doing, how would they do that?
Oh, you're so flattering, Bob. Well, please do call. The station's number is 919-832-5138. I know everyone here at the radio station would love to hear from our listening audience and know more about what you're interested in hearing on the air.
Thank you very much, Mary Jo.
You're welcome, Bob.
And one more of our volunteers, Wonder Dixon.
Wonder, welcome to TRRS.
Thank you.
Tell us about your background.
Well, my name is Wonder Dixon, and I'm originally from Raleigh, North Carolina. After college, I did move away for a number of years. I was in the military. I was an Air Force nurse and married and traveled around with my husband's career. Then I moved back home to Raleigh in 2000. My background, I'm educated as a registered nurse and now currently work in nursing education. I really, really enjoy my job. What I do is, as we are moving more and more toward an electronic patient record, my job is to teach the computer software programs to our staff that they'll need to take care of patients and document in our electronic health record.
Where do you work?
I work for WakeMed Health and Hospital, the Raleigh location on Newbern Avenue, and I've been there for going on 12 years now. Used to be a supervisor educator in our trauma center and moved over into nursing education about 4 years ago.
Tell us about your involvement with TRRS.
Gladly. I was so fortunate to be reading the News and Observer right around the holidays, and they were kind of showcasing various organizations, your time or your money. And I read information on the Triangle Radio Reading Services, and it grasped my heart immediately. When I read what the organization stands for and what the volunteer needs were, it made me think I do have a very dear friend who is blind and has been for many, many years. And also I have a love of reading, and it made me think about when my own children were in school, what I did for volunteer service for the school system is I would go in and take books into my home and record them on tape for the students who either had trouble reading or English was a second language. And I really thoroughly enjoyed that.
What do you hope to accomplish as a TRRS volunteer?
The main thing is just to give of myself my time, and I'm just being able to record and read stories. Well, right now I'm just filling in and I'm reading whatever, the newspaper articles or whatever. So just mainly giving of my time and service to the visually impaired community.
Wonder, have you had any interesting experiences, even though you've only been here briefly, have you had any interesting experiences that you'd like to share with our listeners?
Nothing stands out just yet because I am so new, but I will say I'm just very impressed with this organization and the volunteers. All the volunteers I have come in contact with, everybody is so personable and so easy to get along with and so very helpful. So I just think it's a great fit for me.
An example of your on-the-air persona.
Well, sure. Welcome to the Triangle Radio Reading Service. This program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. So, how did I do?
I'm listening.
Speaking of listening, you out there listening to me right now, when you hear me on air, do me a favor. Call 919-832-5138 and give me some feedback on how I'm doing.
Well, thank you, Wonder. I will call. And thank you for being our guest today on Take My Arm.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
It's time again for the TRRS Radio Theater on the Air with another episode of
Blind Justice
with Bill McClure, Richard Dunnigan, Bob Martin, and Myra de Brule as Madame Julia, the cook that Bill has known since she was a child. The scene opens with Bill returning to the freight yards.
Bill, we're all loaded up here, and I was about to come looking for you.
Not to worry. I just felt it was time, and so here I am.
Learn anything new?
Did I ever. And we've got a surprise for you. We thought a good meal was in order before we hit the trail. So we're going to whip up something a little special for you.
Who's we?
Julia is the cook I've known ever
since she was a child.
Here she comes. I can hear her dog.
Hi, boys. Here I am.
Pardon me, ma'am, but this here's our chuck wagon area. You can't bring a dog in here.
Hush, puppy.
Oh, she threw a walnut at me.
Next time, it'll be worse than that if you try telling my dog she's not welcome.
Bob, what's the matter with you? That's a seeing eye dog. That dog can go anywhere it's needed.
I knew that. I'm sorry. I guess I'm just not used to seeing a seeing eye dog around. Nice doggy. Hey, Richard, do you think she'd mind if I pet the dog?
Why don't you ask her?
Doggy, do you mind if I pet you? Ow! She did it again.
Me! You talk to me.
Oh, sorry, ma'am. I'm learning. Ma'am, your dog is staring real hard at the brands on the cattle over there. Why is he doing that?
What is the brand?
It says T-R-R-S. I don't recognize it.
Oh, it's a special herd that comes from North Carolina. It's just beginning for them down there, but you wait a few years and see what becomes of that brand.
Okay, down to our fixing. Julia, you bring those spare utensils?
Yep, thought you could use some of these things out on the prairie. Upside down cake pan.
Upside down cake pan.
Souffle skillet.
I can feel how well seasoned it is.
Microwave.
How do you plug it in?
Don't worry, I have a special adapter.
And what's in that big box?
Things that every up-to-date chuck wagon leaving Kansas City has got to have. 12 steak knives.
11 shrimp cocktail glasses.
10 pastry brushes.
9 omelet pans.
8 egg whisks.
7 cupcake tins.
6 colanders.
5 matching salad bowls with whipped cream written on the outside.
4 glass measuring cup.
3 plastic spatulas.
2 rolling pins.
And a hand-woven English cozy straight from London.
There we are. Let's get to work on dinner.
A little of this.
Some of that.
Half cup of this sauce.
A handful of that concoction.
Wait a minute. What is that stuff?
Don't ask.
Some of this while it's still moving.
Are they supposed to look like that?
I don't know. I can't tell.
Chop up a lot of these.
A few sprinkles of this.
A dab.
A dollop.
A pinch.
A smear.
A smattering.
And one for the pot.
There. Dinner is served.
I can't eat that.
Why not?
Because I saw what you put in it.
Just try it.
Not on your life. No, not on my life. Nobody in their right mind would eat that, whatever it is.
Bob, come over here.
I didn't do anything.
We know, but are you hungry?
Oh, boy, am I.
Now close your eyes tight and keep them closed.
Open wide and taste.
Wow, that's the best I ever tasted. Can I have some more?
All you want. Just keep your eyes closed.
Mm, oh, this is delicious.
How can you eat without seeing what you're eating?
We do it all the time.
We don't know what you're putting in it.
That's right. Go ahead, give me a bowl, and I'll close my eyes. Hey, this is good. Dining al fresco. It's just a matter of...
Blind justice.
You know, in this case, it might be blind faith.
Yeah, that too.
Another story from her days at the Governor Moorhead School by Myra DeBruel.
This little story is called Danny Boy. Well, he'll always be Danny Boy to me. His real name was Billy. And it happened when we were in about, the first or second grade. Billy had blonde hair and blue eyes, and we were drawn together like magnets. I took voice lessons in that grade, and I wanted Billy to take voice lessons, too. I mean, I just loved to hear him sing. I'm sure he must have sounded like a young Pat Boone. Miss Davis let me bring Billy to voice lessons, and Billy loved to sing, too, but he was really afraid to sing unless I sang with him. When he tried to sing by himself, his voice would just shake and tremble. So most of the time, we sang together. Now, in those days, students sometimes would go out on trips. We would go to Lions Clubs or Civic Clubs or different types of places, and we would put on programs. We would sing or play the violin or the piano. And mainly this was done, I know, to motivate giving to blind people, to the school or that kind of thing. And just to take some of us and do a program would just, it would motivate them. I got to go on these trips a lot when I was little, and I just loved it. Well, this time we were going on one of those trips, and Billy was going to sing his very first solo. He was going to sing Danny Boy. And Miss Davis said, now you try to make Billy laugh and not think about how nervous he's going to be. Well, we always had dinner on these trips, and this time was no different. We had dinner, and I'm sitting there, and Billy's sitting beside me, and I found the little decoration they always put on these fancy plates, and I picked it up, and I said, this looks like it came from my papa's pastor. And I tasted it, and I said, ew, it tastes like it did too. And Miss Davis snatched it away, and she said, Myra, stop that. So then I found this little thing on my plate, and it looked like a donut hole. It looked like a small donut hole. That's really what it looked like. And I said, hey, Billy, I bet I can get this whole thing in my mouth at one time. And I began to do just that. I began to push this thing into my mouth as far as it would go. And just as I got it really good in my mouth, Billy reached over and punched my ribs. Well, guess what? It was filled with marmalade and grape jelly and a bunch of goo that ran all down my face and chin and onto the light blue dress I was wearing. Everybody at the table thought that was really funny, but Miss Davis grabbed me by the arm and took me off to the bathroom. What were you doing? Well, I was trying to help Billy not be afraid. And she said, well, you're going to have to turn this dress around backward and wear it that way. Well, that made me really upset. I just couldn't think about being standing in front of all these people wearing my dress backward. But she said, well, maybe you won't do that next time. I went back to my place, just really humiliated. And Billy said, are you going to help me sing? And I said, I am never going to help you sing again. Finally, it was time for Billy to go sing, and he was going to sing Danny Boy. Danny Boy has a really high A in it, and Billy was really afraid of that A. Now, I knew he could hit it. I knew he could hit that A just fine. But the line in that song of the first verse is, I'll be here in sunshine or in shadow. And Billy was coming up on that here, which was going to be that great big high A. And his voice touched it, left him, touched it, left him, touched it, left him. And it just kind of didn't come through, but everybody knew what it was supposed to be. And he went on with his song, and my heart just melted. And I thought, I don't know how to help him sing, but I need to help him sing. The second verse had the same note. It had that A, and the line was going to be, for you will bend and tell me that you love me. Well, I'm sitting there in my chair, and Billy's getting closer, and his voice is shaking harder, and I'm really concerned about him hitting that A. So from my chair, I began to sing with him. I'll see if I can do it again. We'll see. For you will bend and tell me that you love me. And I sang that from my chair, and Billy got through the rest of his song, and nobody knew it really happened. But I knew it, and Billy knew it, and Miss Davis knew it, and from that moment on, he was Danny Boy to me. I do remember coming home from that trip. Of course, I fell asleep in the front seat. I always did. But I remember when I got out of the car, I heard this bird singing. I know since that it was a mockingbird. And as Bobby Churchill picked me up to carry me to Kay Cottage, I said, you hear that bird? He said, yeah, he's singing for you and Danny. But all I cared about the next day was wondering what happened to my chewing gum.
Do we have time for Professor Bill?
It's time now for Outside the Box with Professor Bill. The problem, you were traveling down a little country road looking for a particular farmhouse, and you come to a fork in the road, and the sign is missing.
Well, just ask someone for directions.
You're in luck. There are twin brothers standing there, but one of these brothers always lies, and the other one always tells the truth. You can ask only one question. What question do you ask, and of which brother do you ask it?
Are they identical twins?
Trick question, Bob. I couldn't see them anyway. And even if I could, I couldn't find out which brother lied and which one told the truth with only one question.
Then why put it in the problem?
It tests your ability to separate information that is needed from information that isn't. How often have you seen someone trying to solve a problem by struggling with details that had nothing to do with the problem?
Oh, good point. So, I have to come up with one question that, whether they tell me a lie or the truth, will give me the answer as to which road to take.
Good thinking. Whether the answer you get is true or not, you'll know which way to go. So, what is the question?
Okay, if I take the left road, will that get me there?
Yes. No.
Should I take the right road instead?
No. Yes.
What if you make the brothers evaluate each other's response?
But only one question.
I've got it. To either brother, which way do I go, and would your brother agree with that?
And that would give you the correct answer?
Well, if I asked the truthful brother, he'd tell me the right way.
And he'd say that his brother would disagree. Because that brother would have lied about the correct direction to take.
And if I asked the untruthful brother, he'd tell me the wrong way.
And he'd say his brother would agree. Because he would lie not only about which direction to take, but also that his brother would agree with him.
And so, I go the way where I got an agree and a disagree.
You did fudge a little. You actually asked two questions.
Oh, but I asked them in the same breath. Doesn't that count as one?
It's much simpler just to say, which way would your brother tell me to go? If you ask the truthful brother, he would tell you the way his brother would point, which would be the wrong way. And if you ask the untruthful brother, he would lie about which way his brother would point, and that too would be the wrong way. Whoever answers, you go the other direction.
And I arrive at my destination.
Another solution, thanks to creative thinking from... Outside the Box.
You know something? I was thinking about our conversations with our volunteers and some of the things that they said.
Yes?
I think we have some of the best volunteers in the world. How would we ever be able to keep up our programming on the air without them?
We couldn't, and sometimes we may not thank them enough. Where would we be without the voices that our listeners come to depend on every day?
And I am thankful for the privilege of being one who has listened to our programming and am now able to speak to our audience, one sight-impaired person to another. Don't stop being better than anyone might have suspected.
Bill, you sound like you really mean that.
You better believe that. Anyone can put roadblocks in front of us, but we are the only ones who can stop ourselves.
Bill, that sounds like a good place to end today's show.
Okay. Until next time, this is Bill McClure for the Triangle Radio Reading Service with another episode of Take My Arm.
This program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience and is designed with the assistance of print and visually impaired volunteers.
And this is Bob Martin. If you could assist underwriting any of the TRRS programming, please call us at 919-832-5138. Your financial help goes entirely to keeping our station on the air.
Any last thoughts?
Yes. Agatha Christie once said, the best kind of husband to have is an archaeologist. The older the wife gets, the more he's interested in her.
So until next time, when the little red light on your dial becomes a deep amber...
Bill, you remember those days?
I may not have been able to see them, but I remember them.
Goodbye.